Hello there, I'm Hugh Rimmington. Welcome to the Round Table. Now, we live in highly partisan political times, and yet there is one enormous reform that has gone through, winning support from all sides of politics. The National Disability Insurance Scheme is designed to provide dignity and support to all Australians living with a disability, whether it was something they were born with or acquired through accident or illness. Politicians as disparate as Jenny Macklin, Julia Gillard, Tony Abbott and Mitch Fifield all played key roles in seeing the legislation through. Bill Shorten was an early engineer of the policy. Malcolm Turnbull and Scott Morrison, in last year's budget, refashioned the tax system to help pay for it. Indeed, from July next year, you'll be slugged an extra 0.5% on your Medicare levy because of the NDIS. Now, it's due to become fully operational in South Australia and New South Wales from July this year, but it has been rolling out over the country and has been doing that now for some time. And by July 2020, it will be a truly national scheme. So if everyone seems to agree with the idea of it, why are we hearing cries of deep alarm? Let's take that question to the round table. Damien Palmer's daughter Bethany is profoundly disabled. She's now being dealt with under the NDIS in New South Wales. Jordan Steele John is a senator. At 23, he's the youngest person to sit in the Senate. He's also the first to do so in a wheelchair, and he's long been an advocate for people with disabilities. And Therese Sands is the director of DPO, Disabled People's Organisations Australia. She is an expert advisor to the NDIS Independent Advisory Council. Damien Palmer, if I can start with you, can you describe the struggles that your daughter Bethany faces every day?
Okay, good morning, Hugh. Bethany is 18. She lives with a condition called Dravet syndrome, which involves prolonged and frequent seizures, developmental delay, movement and balance issues, orthopaedic conditions, delayed language and speech issues, nutrition issues, sleeping difficulties, chronic infections, travel regulating body temperature.
So what help does she need on a daily basis?
Well, she is on the severe end of the scale in terms of intellectual disability. So she doesn't understand, doesn't understand any spoken language. So she basically needs assistance with all of her daily activities. She needs help dressing in the morning. She needs assistance with all her meals. Sometimes she has to be tube fed. Sometimes she can eat. She can't be left alone due to her seizures, due to balance issues and the occasional self-harming behaviour. So she basically needs constant support for all of her daily activities.
So Bethany and your family in a wider sense would seem to be the almost the ideal candidates for the National Disability Insurance Scheme, exactly what the scheme was set up to try to help, the people that it was set up to help. What's your experience been?
It has been extremely disappointing from almost the start, almost 18 months ago. It's been a series of disappointing experiences, particularly with the planning process and then very poor interactions with representatives of the NDIA, whether that be staff of the National Disability Insurance Agency or local area coordination staff, that is the people employed by the NDIA's community partner organisations, as they call them.
Mm. We're going to hear a lot about the word planning because this seems to be central to how the NDIS operates. If I can ask you, Therese Sands, as an expert advisor to the NDIS, what is a plan? How critical is it to the way in which a person is helped?
Well, Hugh, first of all, I probably should make out that I'm not speaking in my capacity as independent advisor. I'm really going to be speaking in my capacity as from disabled people's organisations and the experience of people with disability. So we've known for some time that the planning process has been very problematic for people with disability. And it's been an issue that's been consistently fed back in terms of lack of consistency.
Can you tell us what a plan is? Because not everyone will understand why that's so critical to the care.
Well, a plan. Once a person is accepted into the scheme, then a plan will be developed with the person, which sets out what the supports are they need, and the funding allocation then is based on that plan. So the plan really provides the basis for the support a person is going to get and the funding that is going to be provided. The thing I can say about the planning process is, the agency has recognised, and because of the significant concerns that have been provided to the agency around the planning process, they are doing trials at the moment, and there has been a lot of work done in terms of revising the planning pathways, is what they're calling it. So there is no doubt the planning pathway does have to have significant enhancement and revision, and we're hoping that this current piloting and the current development and revising of that planning pathway will ensure that NDIA planners, local area coordinators are coordinating and working together with NDIS participants, the people with disability involved, their families and carers, to ensure that the plan actually provides the adequate supports, the reasonable and necessary supports that people can expect, and proper funding to ensure that it's implemented appropriately.
Sure, because I mean, one of the problems that people have stated is that someone comes along, they make up a plan, the plan goes off to the National Disability System without any further. It's not reviewed by the family that's involved before it goes off. So the family then gets back, here's what's going to happen. And that's wrong. We've had some quite absurd examples of people where the names are wrong on the plan and you can't correct it. You have to go back and start another plan. That something dreadfully amiss has happened, hasn't it?
Yes, look, I think those issues are just very concerning, and it's really concerning because it indicates that there's a certain amount of bureaucracy that's creeping in that we, people with disability and our organisations, have really wanted the agency not to replicate. So we're trying to have a completely different system here that is not based on old bureaucratic service systems where people are told what they're going to get. There's no choice and control. The whole point of the NDIS is that people with disability are meant to be central and having choice and control. So we would absolutely say that people should have an opportunity to see their plans before it's approved, to make sure that what they've talked about and what they've discussed is actually what is in the plan. And we, again, that there clearly is some systems and process issues when we hear about people receiving letters or correspondence that has a completely different name on it or details in it. So there's issues around privacy there, but there's also just issues around what's happening internally in the processes and systems.
Damien, have you got a response to that?
Yes, well, just first on the, it is true that the NDIA is piloting a new participant pathway in a couple of areas of Victoria. But I'm not hopeful about that. I'm sceptical. I mean, for a start, as you pointed out, we're going to have the entire state of New South Wales will have been rolled out by the time they've finished the pilot process and decided what they're going to implement and what they're not going to. It seems to me most of what's in the new participant pathway that they're piloting are things that they should have been doing all along, things like being able to see a draft plan before it's finalised. I've written previously on our experience where my wife's name was wrong in Bethany's plan and we couldn't change that without getting a whole new plan. Or just for example, the NDIA released their report on the consultation that led up to the trialling of the new participant pathway, recently released their report. It says one of the things they found was that participants wanted greater transparency in how the NDIA used the information they provided to the NDIA to develop their plans. Now, I would have thought you didn't need to pilot that either to know that it needs to happen. that there needs to be some kind of transparency around how they're actually going from the information you provide to them to producing the plans that they produce, many of which seem to bear no resemblance whatsoever to the information provided and the needs of the person.
Senator Jordan Steele John, you're new to the Senate, relatively speaking, but you're certainly not new to disability issues.
No.
You're in a wheelchair from cerebral palsy. You've been a disability advocate. Are you concerned that this is not going as promised?
I mean, yes, the issues raised by Damien and Therese are deeply concerning. I think what is really important to remember is that the NDIS really represents the biggest social service reform since Medicare. And it was meant to embody a fundamental paradigm shift from a charity founded system which was crisis driven and focused on the gatekeeping of resources rather than the flagging of unmet need, to a system based around the fundamental human rights of disabled Australians and our societal obligation to ensure that we receive the supports necessary to live full, active and participatory lives. So that is the goal of the NDIS, and Theresa's rightly mentioned, you know, the emphasis on choice and control. And what was always my concern, to be quite honest with the panel, was that these aspirations, as necessary as they are, were going to then be implemented by the people who bring us Centrelink. Quite frankly, the same bureaucratic mindset would creep into the system because there fundamentally would not be the cultural shift necessary to deliver a scheme such as this. And I think we've seen that in the failures and problems around the planning process. The idea that we would be in 2018 with the scheme nearly fully rolled out in two major states and the NDIA is only now coming to the idea of trialing, the idea that I get to see my plan before it is made permanent, is just quite frankly laughable and emblematic of problems that have began to creep into the scheme.
I mean, one example that's been given that's turned up is that, say, a sum of money is provided by agreement. This is when the system's working well. A sum of money gets provided by agreement. This is what you're going to need to provide all the needs for this particular individual. And then someone might be living where they can't access some of those services. They may not be available. And then the system comes back to them and says, well, you haven't spent that money, so therefore we're taking that back from you. And,
and
you don't get that back again.
And your secondary plan is smaller than, you know, the one that you had the first time round because you didn't use the money. And I think also highly concerning, and Damien would know from a New South Wales perspective about this, is the way in which state governments, who traditionally played a large role in the delivery of disability services, are now using the cover of the NDIS to crab walk away from their responsibilities to disabled Australians.
Isn't this central to the whole question? Is that when you take, there are so many fights between state and Commonwealth levels of funding on so many different issues, but you've taken a highly complicated, expensive part of service delivery and said, look, we've got this national system, we can do it all at the national level, and states, always looking for an opportunity to save a bit of money, say, you beauty, you look after it. We'll cut back all the money that we were spending on it.
Well, I think that is some of the ways that particularly New South Wales, to their shame, I have to be quite frank with you, have treated the NDIS. I mean, the issue around the provision of out-of-home care in certain circumstances where that is necessary for children is quite frankly one of the most outrageous examples of bureaucratic buck passing that I have ever seen showcased by a state government. So yes, I think we have got that going on. But what I would also say, as somebody who has been a devout advocate of the scheme since the moment it was proposed, it is important to remember that the previous system was crisis driven, fundamentally flawed and totally inadequate. And so when we are as we must be, clear-eyed about the problems of the NDIS. It is always towards making sure that it is fully realised, because I worry about the extent to which we might now see conversations around a need to, you know, totally scrap the scheme and go back to what we had. And that wasn't meeting the needs of disabled Australians either. So it's about being really clear as a community that we expect to get what we were promised, and we will be very clear in our advocacy around that.
We are talking at the roundtable with Damien Palmer, Therese Sands and Senator Jordan Steele-John, who you just heard from. I want to bring in a couple of comments that have been sent through to us, and there are a lot coming through to us. There are approximately 4 million Australians with a disability, says Jan from Preston. Only 500,000 will get the NDIS. There's another complaint here from someone else has turned up saying, why are people over 65 excluded? It's irrational for a whole bunch of conditions that were contracted as children. And also from someone, there's no name on this one, but saying, how about talking to someone with a positive approach? My daughter has had nothing but good outcomes from the NDI system. Come on, let's hear both sides. Therese, is that a more common experience? Do you think that overall people are having a good experience?
Look, I think there are many people having very positive experiences, and the aims and objectives of the NDIS are being realised for many people, and that's absolutely fantastic. And we want to be able to ensure that is the situation for everyone. But unfortunately, it's not what I would hear on a daily basis in terms of people with disability who are our members or who come to us for advocacy assistance. Often we're supporting people who are having significant issues around having their review of their plan, core supports, funding cut with no explanation, where they are caught in the middle of a demarcation dispute, for want of a better term, between the NDIA and state-based service systems, who will provide the funding, who will provide the support, and in the meantime, the person has no support, or is, you know, their funding is quickly running out. So we're dealing with a number of issues that we're very concerned about, and we know that, you know, we keep feeding the issues to the agency, and we know that they are attempting to deal with this. They're looking at these issues, but something is happening where it's taking quite significant time, and it's on the ground. It's not translating down on the ground, even if there is policy or guideline change, or there's something happening on the ground that is concerning for people. But I
also think about the individuals. We talk about the people involved here, often under enormous levels of stress. You may be like Damien, who's articulate and is right across this kind of stuff, but people may not have those resources to deal with it, and yet they're dealing with the new bureaucracy, which is complex. They don't know, as we see there, why are some people essentially put into the NDIS system and others excluded from it. How do you navigate? How does an individual navigate through such complexity?
Well, it is extremely difficult, and people find it very challenging, particularly if the information provided isn't even accessible to them. And I'm talking about, say, people who are blind and vision impaired who are getting print letters, and they're perhaps people with intellectual disability not having easy read material. But I also think it's about the absolute critical importance of having independent advocacy support for people so that they can get assistance independent of the system to assist them to navigate through. So, you know, Damien has clearly articulated how difficult it's been for him. And as you've mentioned, he's been sort of advocating for his daughter and is able to do so. Many people don't have family, don't have the ability to be able to continue to navigate the system or work through it. So the importance of independent advocacy support is critical here.
I mean, there's budget cuts there. I know you've got strong views on this, Jordan, as a former disability advocate before you entered Parliament. There does seem to be a move on to cut funding from those very advocacy groups whose job is to blow the whistle when things aren't working right.
Absolutely. And look, New South Wales is really, the government, state government there, Minister Williams, is really in the process of disgracing themselves in this space. They have fiddled with with advocacy funding in New South Wales and have basically failed to guarantee it, precipitating a situation where the entire sector looks now to go to the wall at a time when there has never been a greater need for both individual and systemic advocacy. Centrally, the NDIS is about making your voice heard, and that is the central objective of advocacy. I fail to see how you can roll out successfully a system like the NDIS based on fundamentally new principles and highly complex without a strong, active and independent advocacy sector. So it really falls upon New South Wales, state governments across Australia, not only to guarantee current levels of advocacy funding, which have often been reduced over the years, but also to commit to increasing advocacy funding so that they can meet the increased demand.
Damien, in terms of what you're trying to do for Bethany to give her the best possible life that she can live, what is your sense of the NDIS? Jordan has suggested that his fear is that people will say, well, let's just scrap the whole thing. Do you see enough promise in the system not to do that?
Absolutely. Like Jordan said earlier, the NDIS as designed is a much, much better system than what we've had previously. And so any criticism that I make of the of what is happening is with the goal of trying to make the scheme better, to try to have the scheme that was promised, have the scheme that was legislated, have the scheme that was designed by the Productivity Commission. Hugh, I wonder if I can just make a response to a couple of things that
sure
have
thing.
Been said. The first one is everything that Jordan has said about the New South Wales government, I absolutely agree with, and I will say no more than that. On the issue of advocacy, now I'm a research fellow with Charles Sturt University, and I've been doing research on the scheme since before I had the personal experience of navigating it on Bethany's behalf. And so I went into it with a fair understanding of how things were supposed to work, what the basic philosophical principles of choice and control, all of that. And from the moment I started interacting with people representing the NDIA, there's been the exact opposite. Whenever I have raised questions for clarification, sought information, queried things that were being said because I didn't think they were consistent with the legislation or with the operational guidelines, there's been pushback, I've been threatened, I've had email exchanges, phone conversations just terminated. And I think that this response, I consider myself an equipped advocate for my daughter. And I think this response reflects the cultural problem that Jordan named, that the kind of Centrelink mentality. I get the sense that, that there are people who are surprised when I query them or ask questions because I'm not supposed to do that. I should just fall in line and do what I'm told.
Yeah. I should note, again, I've got another message coming through from someone, again, no name, who has a daughter at 20 years old who has ASD. I'm not quite sure what that is, I've got to say, but says, I can't speak highly enough for the positive impact that the NDIS assistance is having on her life. But also Mike from the ACT saying the extra Medicare levy is a clear red flag that funding is an issue, and this will drive the bureaucratic response that always looks for, quote, efficiency dividends as KPIs. Jordan, you sit in the Parliament. This is fundamental to it, isn't it, that this is a major scheme. The pricing of it runs to many billions of dollars a year. We have this new additional Medicare levy to pay for it. It will inevitably come to pass that bureaucracies will be driven to try to save money, won't they?
Well, it'll inevitably come to pass if that is the way you approach it, if you approach it as an expenditure. But as Damien rightly pointed out, the NDIS was designed and suggested by the Productivity Commission as a actual program which will which will generate great economic dividend for the Australian economy. Now, this isn't the way that we should fundamentally approach it. This is about the realisation of the fundamental rights of disabled Australians, which have and are still being completely disregarded and not realised by our society currently. But I get very frustrated when we have this conversation about cost, I have to be quite honest with you. I sit in the Parliament and every day of sitting weeks we're in there, we speak quite nonchalantly about spending billions of dollars, particularly in the defence sector of the economy, the arms manufacturing package that the government's just announced, corporate tax cuts and things like that, that run into the tens of billions of dollars and are happily justified as necessary. And yet when we come to the social services sector, all of a sudden we have to count the cents and the pennies and what have you. So I think it's about priorities, and I don't give much credence to the idea that, you know, this is it's too expensive and too much trouble to realise the fundamental of rights of Australians with disabilities. I don't accept that at all.
Therese, is it realistic to expect with something this complicated, when you're dealing with people with such a range of individual stories, individual difficulties, necessarily you've got a Commonwealth bureaucracy and states also playing or not playing their part? Is it too much to expect that we're going to have a smooth thing where everyone's happy?
Look, I think we're still in transition. That's one thing to say. And I think what we're seeing is all the complications that are coming from such a transformation. So the way the Senator is describing it is absolutely accurate, and I agree with his comments. This is such a transformation that for all of Australian governments, as well as for our communities and for the service sector, for disability support workers, for everybody, that we are going to have problems. We are going to have issues arise as they're through this transition and through the implementation. But I think Damien's right. We need to be able to pinpoint those and get them identified, get strategies to deal with them very quickly to ensure that this scheme is successful. This scheme has to succeed because the other one was not able to, for all the reasons identified by the Senator, was not able to provide what was required for people with disability, did not have the human rights underpinning that is required to really ensure people with disability take their rightful place as active and full participants and citizens in this country. So we have to recognise the issues, we have to identify them, and we all have to, and certainly people with disability and our organisations are actively trying to ensure that we get the system that we fought for. So it wasn't just politicians who put this system in place, it was people with disability behind that fighting to get this change.
Now, what about mental health issues? We haven't talked about that particularly. There's a lot of concern that people with profound mental health issues are going to be essentially cut out of the system.
So I think there are some real tensions between the mental health system and the NDIS. And they're manifesting in, I suppose, people that we would think should be eligible to the scheme not being found eligible. There's issues around how the eligibility criteria in terms of permanence doesn't quite fit with mental health understandings of recovery-based outcomes, for example. But I think that is one tension that illustrates how, because there's many tensions between different service systems, health, the justice system, child protection, etc., we need to really address those. We have to ensure that people with disability, or people with disability, regardless of whatever the medical condition or diagnosis, whether they have psychosocial disability, etc., that they all are equally benefiting from the scheme. And at the moment, we know certain groups of people, like people with psychosocial disability, are not seeing those benefits realised.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Many thanks to my guests today, Therese Sands from the DPO, Disabled People's Organisations Australia, the Green Senator Jordan Steele John from Western Australia, and Damien Palmer, whose daughter Bethany is on an NDIS plan. Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable. I'm Hugh Remington. Until next week.